Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Sari with HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm in Roberta's in Bushwick on this beautiful day. And today on the line, I've got Burke Bear. Hi, Burke. You there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, Burke. How's it going?
Going good. How about you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So Burke is an internationally known youth advocate for organic farm and sustainable farming practices. And he happens to be 14 years old. Is that right, Burke?
That's right.
So he's been all over. He's given talks. He's given lectures. He's given a TED Talk before. He's sort of claiming responsibilities for his generation, I think, as far as advocacy goes. There's not a lot of other people out there doing what he's doing. Burke, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Well, I've, in the past 3 years since I did my first TED Talk or my first public speech, about food, I've just been trying to go out there, you know, and share the message. And I started really researching this subject when I was 8 years old. And since then, after that, I started, you know, informing friends and family and trying to get them to change and, you know, eat healthier. And once I got the opportunity to speak at TED, it was just really what catapulted me into this whole advocacy.
Mm-hmm. So I have to say that I just find this really, really remarkable. I've never heard of an 8-year-old advocate before, or, you know, someone giving a TED Talk at the age of 11. And I watched your TED Talk on YouTube. And by the way, I mean, how many views are you up to now? It was 2 million, it said on the website.
I'm sure I believe the one on TED.com has around 1 million, and the one that has over 500,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible, you know, how far your voice has been able to spread and how much impact you've made. And it's really exceptional how you've been able to do that. So what happened to you when you were 8 years old that you felt compelled to start learning and investigating about something that, you know, most people don't even think about, nonetheless think about at the, you know, under 10 years old?
Yeah, it was a really simple day. You know, I got up, I was going to make breakfast, and I see my mom's over on the computer. So I walk over and I'm, you know, looking, trying to figure out what she's doing, and she's waiting for her email to load. And I notice on the homepage of her email, under the, I think it's like health and fitness section, it was like mercury found high fructose corn syrup. And I knew what mercury was from third grade science, and all my friends telling me, oh, don't break your thermometer in your mouth, it can kill you. And, you know, knew that it was not the healthiest thing for you. And, you know, corn popped up in my head, you know, food, and I had no clue what this high fructose corn syrup stuff was. And so I asked my mom, and she thinks for a second, and she goes, you know, the only thing I can think it is the sweetener used in sodas.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much where the light bulb above my head popped up, and I go, why is something that can kill us in our food that if we don't have it every day, at least every other day or every week? And I started researching how this mercury got in high fructose corn syrup, and you know, started reading the ingredients labels and finding out that high fructose corn syrup is not only in sodas, but it's in everything.
And so you really made the connection, first of all, that high fructose corn syrup comes from corn.
And yeah,
I mean, where did you grow up?
I originally grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. I lived there for pretty much 12, 13 years.
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of experience with farming, I know, and have spent a lot of time in rural areas. And, you know, I think one of the things that I didn't realize probably, you know, at a younger age until I started studying it was how something that comes from a vegetable can get made into so many different chemicals. And, you know, I didn't really understand the trajectory that can come from something that grows on a farm to something that's, you know, been proven to be a cause of diabetes, a cause of obesity, and just, you know, be connected to so many different problems that occur, you know, within our food system. So what did you sort of, what was your experience in sort of learning that, and what kind of research did you do to make those connections for yourself?
Yeah, well, first off, as soon as I found out about high fructose corn syrup, I started going to the grocery store and reading the ingredients labels to make sure that that stuff wasn't in there. And finding, as I started reading the ingredients labels, I started finding multiple different types of, you know, so-called ingredients that sounded more like periodic elements rather than, you know, things that should be in the food. And so I'd have a little notepad with me, and I'd write down, you know, ingredients like maltodextrin or xanthan gum or so on and so forth. And I'd Google them when I got back home. And I started noticing that all these, you know, byproducts started becoming derivatives from corn or soy or, you know, some of these massive crops we have growing in the Midwest. And I made that connection as I would read on and found out about these things. There'd be side articles or it would mention something like GMOs or pesticides and herbicides, so and chemical fertilizers. And it just kept leading on and helping me to find out more and more about these things.
Yeah, I mean, you've called it the dark side of the industrial food system. So did you feel sort of like the deeper you got into the research, the more and more you were uncovering, and, you know, there was this whole world out there that was just becoming exposed to you because, you know, you actually put in the time to figure it out?
Yeah, well, definitely. When I say it's the dark side of the industrialized food system is because on the face of everything, you know, it's so happy, you know. You have certain, you know, food brands that will have the big pictures of farms on their labels or on the cereal boxes, or you'll have cartoon characters that will, you know, try to appeal to younger crowds and kids. And, you know, it just seems so happy and, you know, more welcoming than what it actually is.
Right. Yeah, you talked a lot about marketing and advertising to children in your TED Talk. I'm just so curious, like, how were you able to sort of see past the deception? You know, like, what was it that called to you to really be able to sort of understand the cynicism that was, you know, behind those happy, smiley faces and really want to get in there? I mean, everybody watches those, but not everybody is curious, or not everybody, it wouldn't occur to most people to think, like, huh, there might be an agenda that's happening, you know, from the marketing companies.
Yeah, I think what it was is it was just that one fact about the high fructose corn syrup that led me to research. Because I remember years before, 2 or 3 years before, you know, friends at school going, hey, you know, if you leave baby carrots out in the sun for 3 days and they turn white, that's because they're preserved with, you know, chlorine or bleach.
Hmm.
And so, you know, they were. I had little facts I've heard from friends or whatever, you know, that they read about this stuff and, you know, knew a little bit about it. That kind of, you know, made me go, but I really didn't give me enough, you know, to make me want to research that much.
Yeah.
And then when that one fact came along about, you know, the mercury being found high fructose corn syrup, that's when it really just led me to really dive in and want to figure out what the heck is happening to our food.
Right. Yeah. So what were the reactions from your friends and your peers and your teachers and your family when you really started doing the research and talking about this?
Well, I have friends and family and people I talk to about this sort of stuff that are both sides of the spectrum and eat totally different ways. You know, I have the one side of the spectrum that eats very healthy about, you know, or eat organic and know what they're eating and supports me very heavily. And I have other friends who, you know, they'll just hang out, you know, on their couch after they get home from school, you know, turn on the Xbox and eat Cheetos all day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's
And those people who are eating the Cheetos, do you think it's because they don't know or they choose to not know, or it's just, you know, par for the course? That's what you do when you get home. I know that that's what I did when I got home from school when I was younger. I, you know, turned on the TV and kind of like raided the snack closet.
Yeah, I think that for some people, it's, you know, a little bit of different thing. For some people, they choose not to know because they don't want to take the extra steps and actually want to become healthy. I think for some people, just because they don't know.
Yeah.
And because of these food companies and the conglomerations that deceive us, it's because of those, you know, these marketing, about the marketing and everything, that has really, you know, had some people just not know. And, you know, if they actually knew about it, I think that some people would actually make a change.
So you think if more people knew the facts in terms of what they were eating and what was actually in those ingredients and what those ingredients were, there would be change. There would be a reaction from the public in terms of, you know, how they chose to shop and how they chose to read labels.
Yeah, because, you know, for me, it was just that one fact. You know, I had hints in the past, you know, about the food system, but it was that one fact that actually struck me. And I think that for everybody, there's that one fact or that one, you know, form or whatever that you see on Facebook or whatever that you'll see. Oh, and that's what'll, you know, really get you to want to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people just have to, for some people, you can present them with the evidence and the facts and see if they will actually catch on to it. And for others, you know, you'll just have to see if they can find the path on their own, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think what you're doing is so important because you're reaching a community that normally I don't think would be exposed to the facts, because certainly we don't learn about food in that way in schools. At least, you know, I didn't. I don't know if you did.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't learn much of this in school. I did a lot of it on my free time.
Right. So it seems like what you're doing is you're really reaching to a generation that normally isn't getting this kind of education. And, you know, I go to school to learn about this now in graduate school, but certainly it wasn't a part of my, you know, my upbringing and my lower education. And you're almost working as a translator. Like, you're taking what you learn and you're synthesizing it in such a accessible way that's making it really understandable and just really a lot more easy to digest, you know, for young people like you, and they can really look at you as a role model. And because you understand it and because it makes sense to you, you know how to speak to them in a way that I think, you know, a lot of older people wouldn't necessarily know how to reach out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that once you start talking to, you know, teenagers and, you know, little kids about DNA sequences and how they able to splice genes and turn, you know, normal crops and the GMOs and that sort of stuff start blanking out. But if you, well, you know,
I mean, I think adult, I already just blanked out.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, if you're able to make it and put it in a way that people are actually going to understand it and not, you know, not think that you're trying to give them some, you know, PhD lecture, then they'll actually listen to you and actually get it.
Yeah, and I think that's why you've been successful, because you don't claim to be, you know, you're not a PhD. You're not even old enough to, like, drive a car.
Exactly.
So you just are yourself, and you tell it how it is, and you talk about what you know. And it makes sense. You know, on your TED Talk, you were completely clear, and I understood everything you were saying, but at the same time, you seemed like you really understood what you were talking about. So as far as your TED Talk goes, how did you, in terms of that presentation, where did you get the research from? Where did you come up with those facts?
Well, I've gotten them from multiple different places. The facts on the genetically engineered foods I got from the Institute for Responsible Technology, which I think is one of the leading researching companies or organizations that have really found out a lot of the truth on GM foods. And a lot of the other stuff has just come through years of absorbing knowledge from mm-hmm. different websites and organizations, and I don't have a list of all the little websites.
No, of course, yeah.
But, you know, it was always something, you know, that it was a special fact that you would pick up on something or other.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's just, you're like, oh, that's interesting. I think that would help other people learn more about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really clear the way that you presented it. So I know you've had a lot of really, really strong reactions in the positive sense. Have you had, you know, since you became more of a public figure and your videos are on YouTube and you're in a film and you have a published book, which we'll talk about, have you had a lot of negative feedback as well? Has anyone sort of confronted you and said that, you know, you've misunderstood the information that you're talking about?
Yeah, well, constantly there are people out there who are naysayers or think they know better. I'm on YouTube every once in a while, and I'll look on the comments on my video. But I remember when I did the talk that, like, right before it came out on YouTube, I'm like, you know what? There are always going to be those people who think they're better at everything, or they know better, and that they're just going to, you know, talk me down.
Right.
And a lot of them, it's kind of weird because a lot of them seem to have, you know, credentials behind their name. So they're either, you know, MD or PhD or whatever. And, you know, I think that you just got to do the research and you'll actually find out what the truth is.
Yeah. And do you think your age has been an advantage to you or a disadvantage when you sort of come up against those types?
I think it's been both.
Yeah.
You know, it's been an advantage in some ways for some people to go, oh, a kid's talking about this sort of stuff. Maybe I should listen to him. And others think, oh, it's a kid. A kid doesn't know anything. So, you know, it works on different sides in different ways that people may think.
Yeah, I imagine it has a lot to do with who you're talking to and who's listening. Yeah. Well, Burke, we're going to take a really quick break and just check in with our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. So just hang on the line. Thanks.
This song is called Numb by Techstar on heritageradionetwork.org.
Is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. Full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Did you know heritageradionetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us and our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
Hello, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. This is Sari Kamen. We are on community sessions today with Burke Bear. He is a youth advocate for organic farm and sustainable farming practices. So welcome back, Burke.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm really interested in how you became an advocate. And I'm just curious to ask you what that means to you. What do you think it means to be an advocate? And how did you go from being just a concerned citizen to someone who's actually, you know, reaching the public? And I just want to talk about what you do.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what to be an advocate for me means is I think it means to be an educator and to be able to spread the word and teach people and let them learn things they might not have known before. And I think it's an important thing to have these people, whether it's a whistleblower or it's someone who may know something that the vast majority of the public may not. I think it's an important thing to have people out there that'll be able to expose companies or, you know, just be able to figure out and teach people what they've learned.
Mm-hmm. So what happened? I mean, you read about high fructose corn syrup, became interested, you did the research, you obviously were impassioned and inspired. How did you go from being someone who just, you know, had information and were talking to your peers to someone who now, you know, has a book, is a public figure, is pretty well known, has had a TED Talk?
Yeah. Well, it started with that TED Talk is really what catapulted me into this whole thing. Is, you know, that was actually the first public speech about food I ever gave.
Mm-hmm. And you were 11 when you did it, so that's just absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, and how it all started was, it was just a simple day, and my mom was on the computer, and she was on Facebook, and she noticed an organization called TEDx Next Generation Asheville. and it said, hey, all you teenagers, you know, 13 to 19, come and send in your, you know, bio and what you'd like to talk about, and maybe you'll be able to have your ideas worth spreading. And so my mom's like, hey, this looks cool. You know, you always wanted to, you know, as soon as you started learning about the food system, you always wanted to tell people about it, and this looks like a cool platform to be able to use. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, but it says, you know, 13 to 19, and, you know, I'm only 11, you know, I'm under the age limit. And she goes, oh, why don't you just send in one? I'm like, okay. And so I send in a short page bio, or not really a bio, but more overview of what I wanted to talk about in the five-minute video of just me, you know, kind of talking and trying to show sort of what I'm, sort of the same thing as the overview, just a video of me talking. And they come back, I think two or three weeks later, saying, you know, you've been chosen as one of the finalists, and we have to go through a little bit more processing and to figure out if you're going to be picked or not. And I talked to a couple of the people with the organization, and needless to say, 5 months later, I was on a stage at the Orange Peel in Asheville.
Wow.
Talk about getting to talk about the food system, and I think that it's really just been from there that's what's given me such a great stage and able to tell people what I believe in.
Wow. Were you nervous?
Yeah, definitely.
You didn't look nervous.
I know. He didn't know what I was going to do, and he was in that audience, and he's like, you just rocked it. And I was, the whole time I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to mess up.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, for anyone, regardless of, you know, your age, to get on a stage with that many people in the audience was pretty incredible.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So what kind of stuff are you doing now? I mean, obviously, you know, that YouTube success really catapulted you. Last week when I checked in with you, you said you were protesting GMOs.
Yeah, I was in College Park Air, the FDA's headquarters, it may not have been their headquarters, but I think it was one of their offices where I actually tested food safety. And it was protesting the recent allowance of GMO salmon in our food system. And it seems like, you know, the government, as there's more and more genetically engineered species or plants or animals that are introduced, the more they're able to just think like they're able to approve it.
Yeah.
Without proper mandatory testing.
How do you feel about this salmon, the GE salmon?
Well, I mean, I oppose it outright, let alone what they're talking about doing with it nowadays. It's genetically engineered a growth hormone, which is actually the same growth hormone that was put into the RBGH milk hormone that was recently outlawed a few years ago. And it actually has a carcinogen and a known cancer inhibitor known as a carcinogen known as IGF-1, which seems to be alarming.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully we're able to at least keep it inside of our farm-raised food system so you're able to opt out of it. There's been also people talking in the government, in the companies, talking about how they want to release it in the oceans.
And
there's a study done by Purdue University that found that if you actually release GM salmon in the wild, it leads to massive deaths of wild salmon population.
Hmm. That's pretty frightening stuff.
It is, definitely.
Yeah. So you're protesting. I imagine you're doing a lot of speaking. It seems like you've met a lot of farmers, too.
Yeah. As I started learning about this stuff, I wanted to meet the people who grew food, because I remember growing up as a little kid, you know, 4 and 5 years old, you asked your parents where food came from, and the only answer you got was a farm. Well, what's a farm, and what does a farm look like? And they go, oh, it's that big area in the country where you see maybe 100 tomato plants growing. You know, I have family who live in Chicago, and when I go up to visit them, I really know what a farm looks like. And it adds with crop dusters and big combines and, you know, massive machinery. That's actually what farming is.
Right. And you've been a huge advocate for organic farmers. I know that you sometimes refer to yourself as a future organic farmer.
Definitely. Because, you know, there are farms out there that are farming the right way, which the way that you actually respect the earth and respect the health of human beings and not caring about, you know, your pocketbook nearly as much as you care. You should care more about who you're feeding than what how much money you're getting.
Yeah.
So actually, I'm going out there and I'm meeting the people who are providing the public with good, healthy, nutritious types of food rather than, you know, farming massive industrial scales. And so when I refer to myself as a future organic farmer, it's because my plan is, as I get older and I get into my early to mid-20s, to be able to have enough money saved up where I'm able to buy my farm and provide people with nutritious food.
So that's still your goal at this point? Like, regardless of, you know, whatever success you've had as an advocate, you still see yourself on a farm, you know, toiling the land every day?
Yeah, as soon as I'm able to get enough money or, you know, and by my, like I said, my early to mid-20s, I'd like to have a piece of land there where I can be able to supply people with fresh food. You know, you look at the statistics these days and the number of farmers is dropping overall, and the number of organic farmers, I think, is even smaller.
And is that because organic farmers aren't receiving the same kind of subsidies that, you know, farmers that are working for corporations are receiving?
I'm sure that's one reason, and I think another reason is just because, you know, some people don't want to do the extra work.
Okay. So what are you doing on a policy level in terms of your advocacy work to try and help with sort of restructuring infrastructure to get more money to these farmers so they can keep doing what they're doing?
You know, I'm just supporting them at the local farmers markets, okay, wherever they may be.
And that's is that what you also suggest we should be doing?
I think that's definitely one thing you should be doing, you know, going to your farmers markets and finding who grows your food, being able to meet them. And, you know, there's been subsidies for organic farmers, but very few and very little in the past. And so we should, counting on the government to support our farmers, we should be the ones who go out there, you know, and be able to, you know, really know that we're helping out this family person.
Yeah. And so you wrote a book about yourself as a farmer.
Yes.
Tell us a little about that. That came out in April 2012.
Its publishing date was April of 2012, but it actually came in late June of 2012 was when it was actually printed. And it was it's a book called Burke on the Farm, and it's about my story, how I got interested in the food system. And I hope it can be a book to get kids my age and younger into the food system and wanting to learn a little bit more about what they're eating. And if it doesn't do that, I hope it can also be an inspirational book and, you know, help show kids that if they have something close to their heart that they want to go out and make a difference to, they can do it.
Yeah. Well, I hope that it's eventually accepted into curriculum in schools. I mean, that's what we need, right? We need more education happening, you know, with people at a younger age so they can start learning for themselves.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the younger you can learn about this subject, I think the more, you know, you can know about what you're eating, because It's such an important thing. It's not like, you know, food is such an important basis in our daily life that to not know hardly anything about it is just, to me, I find crazy.
Yeah.
That, you know, we eat it 3 times a day, we're dependent on it, and if we don't eat it, then we go towards starvation. And without that, you know, it's one of those things that you can't live without, and that I think if you can learn more about it, you're in good shape.
Yeah. Are you working on another book?
I'm planning on it. I'm right now, it's in the early stages. I'm just trying to get a rough draft together and see if I can kind of figure out what exactly I want to write about in all chapters. But it's going to be an adult book, more of a chapter/novel. Book.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to be to teenagers, young adults, adults, and whoever really wants more factual information to support the whole theory.
Wow. Well, I definitely look forward to that. We're about to run out of time, but I just wanted to hear from you. You know, I'm sure you have so many people you've inspired, including myself. What can we do as concerned citizens? I mean, we talked about going to the local farmers markets and supporting our farmers, but, you know, it's just been so wonderful to watch the kind of impact you've made. What can we do to help spread your message?
Well, I always say there's three things you can definitely do to help spread the message. And number one, start a garden. You know, if you have a little plot of land, if you don't have a little plot of land in your backyard, then just hang pots off a balcony, you know, with some tomatoes. And, you know, just start growing your, growing just the minimal amount of food you can possibly can and just grow from there. And number two is, you know, getting to know your farmer. And go out there to your local farmer's markets and shake the guy that knows, that grows your food with his hands and say, you know, this is where my food comes from. And I think number three is just, you know, educate your friends and family. You know, whether it's having a potluck at your house with all, you know, with all local and organic food, then do that. Or, you know, just going out and, you know, showing people that organic food's not expensive and it's not that bad.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I want to go shake a farmer's hand today.
Sweet.
Well, thank you so much, Brooke. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. You are truly, truly such an inspiration to everyone who's been lucky enough to listen to you. And, you know, I know we can, you know, check you out on YouTube and you have your own website. So we'll be sure to follow you and look forward to see what happens next.
Okay. Thank you very much. And
okay.
It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Burke. Thanks for listening. This is heritageradionetwork.org. Be sure to check us out on our website. And also all of our podcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.